Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's Cash'em.
That is so good. That's exactly right.
Or Trash'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a killer bees.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
Cash'em or Trash'em? What are the hot takes? What are the overreactions that we've had over the weekend and into our Monday? And we want to try to sell to the other two, as always, age before beauty. What's your first one you have for us, Blankers?
I don't know. This might be an unpopular opinion. LeBron James is not a team player. LeBron James is all about LeBron James. And LeBron James has shown that since he became the all-time leading scorer in NBA history. Since he became all-time leading scorer in NBA history, he sat out the fourth quarter. And for a guy that's supposed to be so hell-bent on getting a better roster and making his team the best it can be so they can win games, he sat out the fourth quarter. They lost the game when they were only two games out of a playoff spot. Since then, he sat out every game since, and including going to the Super Bowl when his team was in Portland getting ready to play the Blazers, and left his team high and dry now that he's got the all-time record. He can talk all he wants about championships and team and building the roster. All he's doing is building his legacy and not caring about anything else.
Oh, yeah, I'm cashing this. Like, LeBron has not played since the night that he broke the record. I think LeBron's always been about the brand. At one point in time, he needed to win for the brand because he knows his resume is not legitimate if he doesn't have a few championships. And he's won one for three different teams whenever he's been chasing super teams. There's no reason that a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis should be chasing a playoff spot. And that's the added thing to what you're talking about as well. Like, he able to lock down the points championship, all-time leading scorer. And I think the ankle is probably a little bit more legitimate than, like, we were thought to believe early on. But they're in the thick of a playoff race. They're outside of the playoff race, and you're not playing with 20-something games left to go. I don't see any urgency from LeBron trying to get into the postseason. It's almost like he doesn't care if the Lakers are a playoff team or not.
Yeah, I'm cashing this one as well. This is easy. LeBron's always been a bad teammate. He's always been about himself.
All right, my cash it or trash it that I'm leading off with. Major League Baseball doesn't care about extra innings. I think that they've made that very obvious. Runner at second base, the whole Manfred Mann rule that they're going to be, they've implemented going forward for the rest of Major League Baseball history, except in playoff games. The position players can only pitch in extra innings or if they're blowouts. So, like, in the first 9 innings, a position player can't pitch unless it's a blowout game. But then in extra innings, oh, yeah, you can throw them out there. Nobody cares. They don't care about extra innings because they're trying to get games over with quickly. Just end the game in ties. Just have ties. I don't want to see the Manfred Mann at second base. I don't want to see gimmicky baseball. Do you want shorter games? You don't want extra innings? That's fine. Just end the game after 9 innings. If it's tied, it's tied.
I hate ties. I hate ties in all sports, and that's the main reason I'm going to trash this, because otherwise I think you're right. But I'm trashing it because I can't stand ties. That's part of the reason why I can't stand soccer, is because I can't stand any games that end in a tie. And I don't want to see that. But I also want to know, what are you truly concerned about if you're Major League Baseball? Are you thinking that guys' averages and their stats are getting inflated by the fact that they're facing position players? But in extra innings, it doesn't matter if they're facing position players. You know, to me, Major League Baseball in so many ways is screwing around and tinkering too much. This is one of those things.
I think they were so close to getting it right. Like, I was fine with the Manfred Mann in, like, the 12th inning. Like, play a little bit of extras, and then you don't want the game to go on forever like we saw in the playoffs with the Astros. And at some point, add that in, get the game over with, move on to the next one. I'm going to agree with you, Jeremy.
Oh, I'm stunned. I did not think I was going to get a cash on a tie.
I've been saying this since the pandemic when they implemented it.
I hate it.
Regular season games,
I get you don't want to end up like Astros Mariners in a playoff series.
Yeah, me too.
That's fine. But at the same time, like, you know, from a regular season perspective, no one wants to see a game going 18, 19
innings. Yeah. Like, here's what I hate about it, too, is, like, the value of a win means something to me. Like, beating somebody in nine innings means something to me. Now, if you go to the 10th inning and you win because of the Manfred man, and now that win is equal to a nine-inning regulation win, I hate that. That, to me, does not have the same value.
Yeah, no, I
wish they would go more gimmicky. Like, if they're going to go gimmick, like, go full gimmick.
What do you do, home run derby and extra innings?
No, like, NHL, they take three. Yeah. They take two guys off the ice.
Never go full gimmick.
Like, they play 3-on-3. Like,
home run derby?
It's not. Take an outfielder out. Like, I'm not even kidding you. Like.
Oh, and then a right fielder and left fielder end up hurting something by going into the gap full speed.
There is some thought with the new shift rules that we're going to start seeing some two-man outfields where you're bringing in the right fielder to play a very shallow right field like the old second baseman and then shift the outfield around.
So put, like, Jordan there?
You move, like, Kyle Tucker to, like, yeah. One of the gaps.
I'm saying, like, you'd have Tucker and Chaz as, like, the deep guys.
If it's a lefty and you're playing the shift with the new shift rules, you're probably bringing Tucker in to play, like, where Altuve used to play, a very shallow right, and then you're shifting your outfield over to play the pool.
But wouldn't you want Tucker to be one of the two guys out deep?
Maybe because of his range. Yeah, but you're basically playing an outfielder as the shallow, as the old second baseman in the shift, and you're having two outfielders. I was reading up on that today.
That's interesting. All right. My first one today, we keep trying to make mock drafts great again.
We're not trying. We're accomplishing
that. But there's just something missing, and we kind of hit on it in this mock draft today. The Texans have an early second-round pick. The Texans are going to draft three first-rounders this year. They're going to trade up into the first round using that second-round pick. They're going to get their guy at the end of the first round. I don't know who it is, but they're going to trade up three first-round picks for the Texans this year.
I don't disagree with that, and I kind of like the idea of doing it. It's just at a matter of what price. Because then again, like, I've always been hell-bent on this from a Nick Caserio perspective, and it helps us pass judgment on him, pass or fail. Get your guy. And if there are, that's not just about a quarterback, but go get all your guys. If you got gut feelings on guys, then go get them. You've been known to do it in the past when you did it in previous drafts to move up, you know, in the middle rounds. But if there are guys that you want to get late in the first round, if there's a receiver that has your eye that you don't think is going to be there at the second pick of the second round, then go get them. Because I want to see how truly good you are at talent evaluation. I want to see this team get the best players for this team going forward. And if that's the guy that you believe in, go get him, then go get him. I'll cash this.
A lot of people aren't happy with the trade up to acquire players because the Houston Texans have a lot of holes. But even with that, Nick Caserio has proven that he is a willing Dylan son of a gun and that he's willing to move up to trade for players that he covets. We've seen it with Nico Collins. Then we see it with Wallow, too. Like, he traded up for Mechie. Caserio has been a willing dealing son of a gun to even move up. I'll cash it. I'm going to cash this one. And you get the fifth-year player option. Like, I don't think you're going to have to move up a ton to go from the second pick of the second round to move up, let's say, five spots into the first round. And the Texans have tons of picks. They have 11 picks in this draft. I'm cashing this one. All right, what do you got next, Blinkers?
All right, this is the one that we started talking about a little bit, but I've seen this gain some traction with some people, and I'm not on board with it, but I want to see what you guys think about it. Patrick Mahomes will finish his career as the greatest quarterback of all time. I can see him being second. I can see him being in the mix. I can't see him passing Brady, and it annoys me that too many people, based on what have you done for me lately and just winning a Super Bowl, suddenly, it's one thing to say, you know, he's Hall of Fame and he's all the things that people are already saying. I don't see him surpassing Brady with the Super Bowls, let alone the stats and the longevity. I'm going to trash my own, but I want to see what you guys think because I'm really ticked off about the fact that this has actually got legs.
Oh, I'm cashing this. I think Pat Mahomes will go down as the greatest quarterback of all time. He is already the greatest quarterback talent of all time. He does things on the football field that no other quarterback's ever been able to do. He's already got the two Super Bowl championships. The counting stats are going to be there. He's going to break every passing record that there is. And I believe that he's going to win enough Super Bowls, not to say he's going to pass Brady, but he's going to win enough Super Bowls plus his stats where he will be considered the greatest quarterback of all time.
I'm gonna cash it.
You sound so painful doing it.
This is a hard one.
It is a hard one.
Yeah, like, see, because again, it goes back to what we said about what's more valuable, the individual stats or the Super Bowls.
I think he might get the 4 or 5.
Like, I think so too.
But you know what's hard is that, When did Brady in your mind officially pass Montana? At like six?
I think when he got more Super Bowl wins.
But
I
he had losses, right?
It's he like had the, losses, it's but the fact that he put up a number that seems very unrealistic to surpass in the Super Bowl win.
Yeah, me for me, it was the Super Bowl wins. Because I think Montana and Brady, in terms of like the talent, I think they're pretty similar in terms of like where they were statistically relative to their peers, pretty similar. For me, it was when Brady passed him with Super Bowl wins, even with the losses.
Yeah.
I think the losses are fine. I mean, losses prove that you got there.
Yeah, for sure. You got there more times than Joe Montana did.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting. Like, is he going to get to eight? I don't. Mahomes is not winning eight.
I don't think so.
But if he wins six,
yeah,
he's a better quarterback than Brady. If he gets to five or six and passes him statistically, which he will,
yep,
then I think it'll be a.
I think the minimum is five titles. I think the minimum is five. If Mahomes doesn't get to five titles, I don't think he can be in the same conversation as Brady. But if he gets to five, passes all the other numbers, I think that he's the greatest. All right, here's my second one. The American League West will be the toughest division in the American League.
Ooh. Ooh. You know, the Red Sox have fallen off.
Mm-hmm.
The Orioles are getting better, but not there yet. I think I can cash this one because I mean... I think that the Mariners are a team that is definitely focused on trying to catch the Astros, and that means the division and in the American League, and they are putting their money where their mouth is. So they are definitely going to be improved. We know that Jacob deGrom and the money grab, I mean the running money spend that the Rangers are on, they're hell bent on being better. The Angels are better, no matter what, and if they stay healthy, which is the massive if. They're a playoff caliber team just by the veterans that they have and the pitching that they've added. So I'm going to cash this. I like this. I like the fact that the American League West is a better division right now than maybe any division in the American League.
Yeah, I'm gonna cash it as well. I actually think it's pretty easy.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
The Angels made some good additions. They still have probably the two best players in baseball, honestly, on their roster with Trout and Ohtani. The Rangers, like you said, like they added DeGrom. Yeah. They have guys. They've got a good young core still. Like,
got two studs coming up.
The Mariners, to me, are the best team in
the American League. Not sure they play this year, though.
Not probably not. The Astros. Like, I think the Mariners are better than the Yankees. And
I have the Blue Jays winning the AL East.
See, I think if the Red Sox didn't lose Bogarts and they actually spent like they used to spend, their roster was good enough to stay competitive enough where you'd have a legit discussion about the American League East. But I don't. As it stands now, the Red Sox have fallen way off.
I think the Red Sox are going to finish dead last.
I think it's possible. I think it's going to be a Yankees-Blue Jays division. The Orioles are going to flirt with it for a little bit.
Rays will always be
competitive. Yeah. Right.
I wish I could buy into the Orioles. I really did last year. Yeah. They didn't make a single addition.
They're adding Gunnar Henderson, which is going to matter. They're going to be...
Didn't they add a utility guy?
Well, like, maybe. They could have gotten...
Yeah.
They said they were going to spend money and they didn't.
Go get an ace.
Yeah.
Like, they just...
I think they're going to have a worse record than they did last year as well. I really do. I think that the Rangers and the Angels are going to be like 500 contenders. I think they're going to be around the 500 record.
Angels too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I think the Angels have been really shrewd with adding pieces around their stars.
They might be a little bit better than 500.
They used, yeah, I think they'll be right around 81 wins. Because the Angels used to be stars and scrubs. Well, like they had Ohtani, they had Trout, they had some big money that weren't playing, Anthony Rendon, and then they had a bunch of scrubs. Like they bring in a Brandon Drury. They bring in... Hunter Renfro.
Anderson they paid in as a pitcher.
They've made the rest of the players around them slightly better. I think that's going to carry them to around a 500 record. All right, Joe, what's your last one?
The Los Angeles Dodgers do not win the NL West this year. The Padres do.
I'll cash that. I think the Padres are the most interesting team in baseball, not named the Astros, to follow because of our local ties to them. I think the Padres are either going to have unbelievable success or they're going to have so many ego conflicts that the whole thing's going to blow up.
Yeah.
But there's just too much talent on that team.
I wish we had like a baseball hard knocks to follow the Padres this year.
Right. Like the Dodgers lineup does not scare me. Like Freddie Freeman outside. Freddie Freeman's really good.
Mookie Who's replacing Betts, Trey Turner?
Good. Exactly. Gavin Lux.
And is J.D. Martinez even, what's he, a shell of himself? A shell of himself, and he's going to be someone they're counting on?
Walker Buehler's
How about
their
rotation,
the
too? Their rotation's not scary either.
Nope. Yeah.
Like, I had the I bet every division today. And it's funny that you're doing this today. I bet every division today. In the American League, I had the Blue Jays, the Guards, the Astros. In the National League, I had the Braves, I had the Cardinals, and I had the Padres. So I'm cashing this, absolutely.
I think the Cardinals is probably the right bet for the Central.
Do you?
It's tight. That's one that I'm worried about.
I
bet the Cubs over.
Yeah, but the Brewers pitching staff, unless there's rumors that they're going to break it up and they don't want to pay all those guys.
I think
they're
going to
trade somebody this year.
They have no offense either.
Boy, they got a lot of pitching, though.
They do have pitching. They got some pitching and all of the offense. 713-780-ESPN.
How about Christian Yelich?
He and Cody Bellinger have fallen off the face of the map once they got rid of sign stealing in baseball.
Think Yelich cheated too?
Hell yeah.
Wow. Weren't the Brewers cheating?
Hell yeah, not hell yeah.
Eric Kratz was the one that was saying this.
Oh, no, that was, he's saying, with the, yeah.
Somebody said it about the Brewers, I thought. The Brewers were the ones calling the Cubs out.
No, the Cubs said the Brewers were cheating.
I thought somebody did.
The Cubs are just whiny babies.
They're lovable losers. I love Wrigleyville.
So is Joe.
Let's get into some more of this draft talk. Some people had some reaction to our making mock drafts great again. Some questions pertaining to the Houston Texans draft. Some outrageous questions about what the Texans should do. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Royce from Tulsa has been on hold for 20 minutes. Appreciate him listening from Oklahoma.
From Tulsa? Okay.
Yeah, I'm big in Oklahoma. They love me in Oklahoma.
Because you drive there all the time.
I do, and my wife is from Oklahoma. So they love me from Oklahoma. I'm a big deal there. 713-780-ESPN. Royce! Thank you for listening. Thank you for waiting. What you got for us? You're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Yeah, I'm actually from Splendora, but I've lived in Tulsa since 98.
Okay.
Yeah, so I got a couple comments about the mock draft and then a question to Jeremy about his comment that he made about Caserio to determine who plays on game day.
Yeah, well, let's start there, and I'll get to your mock draft question. The only reason that I said that is that I feel like Nick Caserio, because there's a 53-man roster, you have a 48-man game roster, where you have to inactivate seven players. Nick Caserio could have just taken the seven players and made them inactive and took it out of Lovie Smith's hand. That's what I meant by that.
All right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, as far as the mock draft goes, I mean, there's no way I'm trading up to one. I mean, I'm more likely to trade down and hope that Indy trades up to one and takes Bryce Young, so the Texans will benefit every time Bryce Young goes on IR.
You're not a Bryce Young fan, I take it.
Evidently not.
No. I mean, if Tua can't see over the line in Florida, in Miami at 6 foot or 6 foot one, whatever he is, how is Bryce Young going to do it? And Tua's a hell of a lot thicker build than Bryce Young is. And that's what I'm worried about is his build, because I think he's going to take a lot of punishment.
Yep. Appreciate the call, Royce. Like, a lot of people think that Bryce Young does not take punishment, that he's like elite at eluding it. He's not. Bryce takes some hits. Bryce was injured this year, missed the game because he got hit hard and had the shoulder injury. And we've also had Nick Saban talk about how Bryce Young has had shoulder injury history, which is kind of concerning. The other thing about trading up to number one for like let's eliminate that for a moment. The other thing about trading up to number one for a Bryce Young is that he is very small. Like, there is a huge gamble. And I'm not saying that small quarterbacks can't win in the NFL. We've seen small quarterbacks win in the NFL. Drew Brees, 6 foot, won in the NFL, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. He was a second rounder. Russell Wilson, shorter quarterback, big build. He was a third rounder.
Yep.
Kyler Murray's the smallest quarterback that's ever been taken that high. And Kyler Murray doesn't have NFL success because he lacks talent. He does not have NFL success because he doesn't really have the mind for the game. That's what everybody tells you. Doesn't watch the film, doesn't put in the hours. Yeah. But he has the talent. Like, if he had, you know, a really good head on his shoulders, I think Kyler Murray would be a good NFL quarterback. I don't believe that it's a short issue with Kyler Murray as to why he hasn't had as much NFL success as he's had. The thing, though, is that you're trading incredible assets to move up one spot to draft a guy who has a lot of risk. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't, you know, and Trevor Lawrence hasn't had a tremendous first 2 years of his NFL career, but this isn't a slam dunk, can't miss prospect at number one, or Andrew Luck, or John Elway. There's a lot of question when it comes to Bryce Young.
Unlike the draft the year before, there's more boom-bust potential. That's why there's more hype and buzz about the top three quarterbacks and the fact that they could all end up going in the top five picks. But the problem is that all three have question marks attached to their name and their abilities. And all three are not can't-miss prospects. There's all three's question marks could turn into the reason why they are missed prospects. So there's boom, but there is bust potential, and that's what's scary about this. That's why the more I think about it, as much as I started the whole, you know, campaign for Bryce Young a year and a half ago, the fact is I now have a lot more reservations about that size, that height, that weight, that ability to take hits that you're going to have to face as an NFL quarterback. And the one that you just can't escape is could be the one that could be doomsday for you for a long period of time. So I have reservations now where I thought all along it was Bryce Young or bust.
Yeah. See, I'm okay if you pick Bryce Young. I'm not even to the point where I'm off of Bryce. And I know that takes some shots for fun and things like that. But I'd be happy with Bryce Young at two. Now, if you're trading up for Bryce Young, that's where I draw the line. I'm not doing that because I would be happy. Look, if we fast forward April 27th right now and the Houston Texans are on the clock, I would be happy with any one of these four players. Bryce Young's one of those four. Will Levis is the other. Jalen Carter, Will Anderson. If the Texans select one of those guys at number two, I don't want to trade up for any of them. Take one of those four at number two. I'm happy. I have a very low bar for the Texans to achieve success at number two, much like the coaching hire. When the coaching hire started, give me Benny Johnson, give me D'Amico Ryans, give me Shane Steichen, and give me Mike Kafka. Any one of the four of those guys, I'm all in. Same thing with the draft. Levis, Young, Carter, Anderson, give me any one of those four, I will be happy.
See, that's the thing that I'm saying. Maybe Bryce Young is a better overall talent as it relates to coming out of college, but if Bryce Young takes one hit, and now suddenly we're talking about a guy that can't stay healthy or is affected and is going to continue to be affected every time he takes another one, as opposed to a guy that maybe isn't as good of a quarterback coming out as Bryce Young, but they're more durable, they're sturdier, they can run, they can absorb hits, and they can get better on their shortcomings because they can work on their game, and with the right coaching, they can become a better passer, or they can become whatever their shortcomings are that you're questioning about with maybe it's their internal clock or their intangible things too. They can develop those things, and they can get them better. Then I'm not willing to risk moving up one spot for a guy that I already have a bigger question in terms of durability than the other two. If I get one of the top three and I don't have to give up draft capital to get it, and I have the worst roster currently in the NFL, I think it behooves me to not use more draft capital to get a guy with the biggest question mark of all three, which is that durability and size factor.
And that draft capital is so expensive. Like, we're not talking a third rounder. Like, we're talking a future first to move up one spot for a guy who has some question marks. And I know that people point to, like, Will Levis and his injury concerns, too, the turf toe, had the sprained shoulder, things like that. Didn't miss a game. He didn't miss a game. Bryce Young missed a game this year because he couldn't absorb a blow.
And remember now what we saw in C.J. Stroud in the semifinal game, which surprised a lot of people and weren't expecting to see, was a toughness factor that was something that stood out to people that made them start change their way of thinking about C.J. Stroud. He was tough. He was running. He was showing he could extend plays. That's something that I don't think a lot of people were expecting to see out of him that kind of made people open their eyes a little bit more to him. And the fact that he's bigger and more durable. Just look at the sideline shot at the Utah Jazz game and realize you look like a kid that's waiting to get out of study hall as opposed to a real man that's looking to get out there and take some hits on the football field just by the appearance there and not put him in pads.
I think Stroud really is in play for the Texans still. Like I don't think it's a two-man race.
I think Stroud's going to lose some luster.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
In the workouts?
I think people are going to look at his arm talent and like have him go down in the draft. I really do.
Interesting. Because I think, to me, like I think Stroud is, I still have him above Levis. I haven't done like a deep watch of Levis or anything like that. It's just hard for me. I know he plays in the SEC at a bad offensive line. His weapons left. Mm-hmm. But like watching him, we went like, what, 7 straight weeks without throwing over 200 yards?
Sure.
It's a tough sell.
Like it's no doubt.
It's a tough sell. Like you can see the attributes, but like that to me is like I would rather draft someone based on what I see on tape than what potential could be.
It's honestly Stingley versus Sauce in a more important position.
Sure.
Like, Stingley did not play
much.
Another
option.
It, yeah. Like, Sauce was the guy who was at a small... Well, it's a little bit different because Sauce is the smaller school, whereas Will Levis is the smaller school. But Stingley did not play much his final year at LSU, put nothing on film. They were drafting him based on previous film. Whereas Sauce was one of the best corners in college football the last year while he was at Cincinnati, and the Texans went with the higher upside in Stingley because of what they saw in previous, you know, years of scouting. It's the same thing with Levis. If you put on Levis 2022 film, when he's hurt, when he doesn't have the offensive line, when he doesn't have the talent, when he has an offensive coordinator who was one and done and got fired, you're going to leave very unimpressed and scared taking that guy that high. If you watch 2021 Will Levis, when he was healthy, when he had a decent offensive coordinator, when he had a better offensive line, when he had one NFL talent, you look at a guy, it's like, okay, I see what a lot of people like about Will Levis.
Look, I think the main thing is like I keep going back to, you have to have your gut feeling and you have to base what your decisions are based on that. And if your gut feeling is, whether it started with the fact that Caserio doesn't come from an environment in New England where they believe in drafting a small quarterback and getting a certain body type, to the fact that of all the question marks of all the quarterbacks, the biggest, most devastating question marks could be those of Bryce Young as opposed to what we've seen from Stroud and or Levis, then I think that you shouldn't even consider moving up and know that you're going to get one of your two guys and probably your pick of the two guys that have the attributes that you like the most.
The one thing, though, that I don't think that Will Levis is going to be a Texan. I'll flat out say that. I do not believe Will Levis will be a Texan because the Texans this entire offseason is being normal. It's like being safe. It's doing like what everybody is okay with you doing. Like hiring DeMeco, safe, everybody loves it. Drafting Will Levis would not be safe, and everybody would hate it. Like, I think that the Texans are going into this, we're going to be safe, we're going to be normal, we're going to make picks that basically are popular. DeMeco, very popular. I think that they'll handle the number two pick of the NFL draft very much the same way. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. When we return, we're talking Houston Astros. Astros opening day countdown. 33 shows till opening day. It's the Houston Astro opening day countdown with the Killer Bees next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Astros opening day is right around the corner. It's one of the good things about the Super Bowl is now baseball can take center stage. Pitchers and catchers report tomorrow, by the way. We're going to get videos of all the pitchers and catchers.
I was just
going to
say, Valentine's Day is normally that signature move that the pitchers and catchers are close, so that's great.
Yeah, I know some teams have already reported. Like, I think the Cardinals have reported because Wilson Contreras, I saw videos of him walking into the facility, which I was like, I didn't know he was a catcher. But pitchers and catchers reporting tomorrow. Opening day right around the corner. In fact, we're just 33 shows till opening day. How about that? Just 33 shows till opening day. So every show until then, we're going to have some questions about the Houston Astros. Some things that we have to talk about, we have to discuss. Today, let's start off with this one. We know that Dusty loves loogies, right? He loves his lefties out of the bullpen. He can't stop talking about lefties even when he doesn't have lefties and even when he has righties that are dominant against lefties. Should the Astros have been more aggressive in the market going after a loogie, going after a left-handed arm?
Well, they got they've got a flyer out there already on the veteran that they brought in yesterday.
Yeah, they picked up Gage from the Blue Jays. They claimed him on waivers.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dusty, as you alluded to, Dusty would like to have a loogie in the bullpen. I think that's his comfort zone, and we saw him maybe overuse Will Smith last year once he got him because he still likes to have one. But I think that you've got enough to where I don't think they need one. I don't think that they need to be searching for one between now and the start of spring training and getting into the early parts of the now. And when you get started in the regular season, and you find out that there might be a need if you've got some deficiencies, then you can start exploring ways to acquire one. But I think that, as we talked about the other day, I think they're done. I don't think they're going to do anything else. I don't think they're going to do anything drastic.
Do you think they should have been more aggressive going after one, though, when they were still hot and heavy, like going to get a Chafin? Because Chafin signed a one-year deal with Arizona. They could have gotten that done.
I would have liked to have seen them explore Chafin? Because you and I have mentioned in the past that there's a guy that might make a lot of sense and be a really good fit for this team. And when you had the best bullpen in baseball a year ago and you didn't have a Lugie to really rely on, and you bring them all back, I don't think I'm that concerned about it to where, no, it would have been, I think everything, we're talking about the Eagles and their luxury of being able to pick a running back in a top 10 if they needed to because they have a high pick from a trade. I think from an Astros perspective, it would have been a luxury to be able to go out and say, I'm going to go overspend or I'm going to spend or I'm going to trade and I'm going to get a left-handed relief pitcher. You didn't. You still have the best bullpen in baseball, so no, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it and think that they have something they had to do.
I'm with you. I think that a Lugie nowadays is overrated. With the three-batter minimum, it just does not have as much value as it used to. You can't just come on. Like, Lugie's left-hand, one-out-only
guy.
One
and done, yeah.
That doesn't exist anymore unless it's for the final out of the inning. And then what if that lefty gets on base and you have to keep the lefty out in the game when there's a righty that torches left-handed pitching? So I think it's overrated versus pre-three-batter minimum rule. I think it mattered a lot. I think it was incredibly valuable before the three-batter minimum. That has diminished its value. Now, I'm not going to say that it like completely makes it invaluable because if Andrew Chafin would have been great to fill out the final roster spot on this team, but it's more, like you said, a luxury, not a necessity. The Astros had the best bullpen in all of baseball last year, and they returned everybody not named Will Smith. So the Astros bullpen is going to be just fine. And the Astros have righties that get out lefties very, very well. We saw Brian Abreu basically be the left-handed specialist last year in the playoffs and was dominant. Hector Neris is very good against left-handed hitters. Phil Maton is really good against left-handed hitters as well, and he's going to be back on this team even after he broke his hand punching it on a locker. So I like the makings of this bullpen. They were the best in all of Major League Baseball last year without really a Lugie. You had a little bit of like Parker Moshkowski. You had a little bit of Will Smith after you traded Jake Odorizzi in a salary dump for him. You don't need a lefty on this team. Now, will they carry Gage? Will they carry Blake Taylor instead of Seth Martinez? There's a decent chance that they might. But that guy's not going to be getting any valuable outs in meaningful games.
You're right. And I think that the one thing that's going to be interesting about it is the fact that Dusty grew to love Seth Martinez's ability to do whatever he needed him to do.
Mm-hmm.
But he also loves having a veteran left-handed pitcher on the roster. So it could come down to those two guys.
I think it's going to be those three.
I don't expect Blake Taylor to be in the mix on that.
Uh-huh.
And maybe after he gets back in the swing of things a little bit more in Sugarland, he might factor in. But I think it comes down to those two guys. I think it's Gage versus a guy you want to know as a veteran versus a guy you know in Seth Martinez has been doing a lot of good things for you, cleaning up a lot of messes.
I would say three, but I'm not going to disagree that Taylor's the odd man out. I would say it's going to come down to Gage, Taylor, and Martinez for the final spot. Mm-hmm. On the pitching staff. If you keep Martinez, it means you're not having a Lugie. If you're not keeping Martinez, it means that you want desperately to have a lefty over Seth Martinez. Because I think Martinez is better than both Gage and Blake Taylor.
Who's very effective.
But he also has options. Like, you know, yeah, that inevitably somebody's going to get hurt. So does it make sense to keep a lefty on opening day? I don't really care. Like, I don't care if it's Gage. I don't care if it's Taylor. I don't care if it's Martinez. Because you're going to see all three of those guys at some point.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that that's why when you look at it on the offensive side of the baseball, too, we were talking about it. You know, between Dubon and all the different options they have options. And that's what's key so that you can start a guy out in Sugarland and you can bring him up when you need to fill a void based on an injury. And you don't necessarily have to have a Yuli or a veteran utility player that is going to cost you and also probably is going to be a guy that's not going to be really intrigued by going to be sent down or if the is not hitting the ball well, have a decision made on them. So I think they're a set roster. I think it's fun and it's interesting to always kick the tires and think of all the things they still could do.
Yeah, this was more like during the heat of the offseason.
Yeah, I think, but yeah, right. Should they have done more? You can make that argument, but I think they've done enough. I think that when you're as good as they have been, you have the best bullpen. And yeah, you lost the Cy Young Award winner, but I truly still stand pat on my belief that Justin Verlander's never going to be the pitcher that we saw him with the Astros or previous to that when he was in his heyday. I think that he has taken a step back. I think that they made the right move by moving on and by locking up Javier and having that rotation set and having still a young prospect like Hunter Brown that you have the flexibility with. I really like where they're at in so many ways that I'm not disappointed by them not making another move.
I think that the team pitching ERA might end up being about the same. I think the starting pitching ERA will be worse. Like, you're not going to replace a 1.75
right,
ERA.
Right.
Now, I don't, like you said, I don't expect Justin Verlander to pitch to that level again as well. So, like, is Verlander going to be as good as he was last year? I doubt it. But can you replace a 1.75 ERA and a Cy Young winner? No. You're not going to be able to do that. But I think that the offense is better. I think the bullpen has a chance to be better as well. Like, they already were the best bullpen in all of Major League Baseball, but a lot of them were, like, young.
See, and to your point on that, I think that there's a chance that for what you paid and overpaid, I think that there's a chance that you're going to fall off a little bit. But I think that there's a chance that Abreu takes a bigger role than he did a year ago, because Abreu playoff
so good.
Was so much better than he was in the regular season. And all the things that I was on his ass about and worried about from him between the years suddenly became solvable, and he became unhittable, and he became dominant to where he looks like he could be your closer very, very soon.
Yep.
And give you an extra element bumped up. So I think that's a massive win for the Astros.
I think he's Presley's heir apparent, which
for sure.
I don't know if he gets bumped up, though. Like,
but I think Montero could take a step back, because I still worry about Montero.
Like, you're talking about from like a production point of view.
Yes.
I'm talking about their roles. You're going to enter the season. Presley's your closer. Montero's your setup guy. Neris is your seventh inning guy. And then where does Stanek and Abreu come
in? Like, obviously, it was the flip side of Abreu, right?
Like
Abreu was, they were trying to figure out where you were going to use him. Or you were going to use them in shorter stints, and then all of a sudden he became dominant.
Yeah.
And Stanek was a guy that was dominant, and we were talking about ERAs and replacing him. ERA in the regular season, he was unbelievable. And then all of a sudden, he wasn't even – he was an afterthought in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, this is why this team's built for October. In the playoffs, all you need a starter to do is to pitch four quality innings. Because then you turn it over to Stanek, Abreu, Neris, Montero, and Presley.
That's
five
really,
innings of that. Yeah,
really good.
This team's built for October. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We brought up Maton. I have a question to ask you about Maton. And
I have a question for you. Does he have to still be on their team?
Okay, we'll discuss that on the other side. Also, the Framber Valdez $150 million rumors, greatly exaggerated. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You guys need to take the day off work and play a fun round of golf with your favorite sports station at the ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Occasional Invitational presented by SiteJab.com, benefiting Kids Mills. This year's tournament will take place Wednesday, March 8th at 10:30 a.m. at Wildcat Golf Club. Each golfer will receive beverages from Carbach Brewing Company, lunch, dinner, 18 holes of golf, and a quick award ceremony immediately after the tournament. Register now at ESPN975.com. What were you saying about Maton, Blinkers?
I'm just not a fan. I kind of forgot. I joyfully forgot he was on the team. I know you can use him and need him in the regular season, but I just, in a lot of ways, if you could trade him and get rid of him, maybe that's where you create an opportunity for a loogie, that'd be great. Or maybe he could punch another locker. To me, he's an afterthought. And because of the way the bullpen performed all season long, but more importantly, how it got even better possibly playoffs. Okay. Phil, I think, had a little bit of an attitude problem at the end of the year. I don't need another Ken Giles on my team either, but I'm over the whole Ken Giles. I mean, the whole Phil Maton thing.
I don't mind Maton. Like, Maton's been solid. Like, Maton's fine. He had a 3.85 ERA last year. Like, that's pretty good for your seventh most important reliever. You know what I mean? Like, would you rather have Blake Taylor or Phil Maton?
That's a different story.
Like, these are, like, I agree with you in the sense that I don't want Maton in high leverage situations. Like, if Maton was one of your top three relievers, then you have some issues.
He's an innings eater, and he does some things in the regular season, great. But you know, the fact, it makes it a lot easier to move on from him or just use him in those situations, knowing who you have, like you said, from the fifth inning on if you had to.
He's a decent arm. That's your seventh most important reliever. That's going to be a plus three, minus three guy, and probably a minus three guy. When you're losing by two or three runs, he's going to be the guy that saves innings for all of the other guys that are higher leverage in the bullpen that are going to be pitching in plus
games. I guess the main reason
why
I'm ready to move on from him, though, Jeremy, is the fact that he's pouty pants, right? Like, the fact that he punched a locker knowing that he's not going to be on the playoff roster for the opening round of the playoffs is putting...
I think that was more because he wouldn't have known that yet. That was more because he had a bad outing against Phil. Like, he probably saw the writing on the wall.
Yeah,
He saw the writing on the wall.
He literally gave up a hit to his brother
then
walked into the clubhouse and punched something.
Sure, but like...
But again, that's selfishly putting yourself above your team with your little anger management issue or your temper tantrum, when if you had any intention at all of being a part of this team. You wouldn't even try to something so stupid if he didn't break your hand.
I mean, it was stupid. There's no doubt it was stupid. I'm not defending the action of punching your locker, but I'm not just shipping Phil Maton because he punched his locker.
Like, well, he does sort of alleviate some of the need for like that other lefty in the bullpen because he's a reverse splits guy.
Yeah,
I was going to say, yeah, he was better. Yep.
So it's lefty. Like if you're not going to have go get a lefty for Dusty, then you kind of have to keep
He's kind of an insurance policy if you're not going to have a loogie. But I'm just not a big fan of how it all went down and how he pitched, you know, last year versus the year. And again, he was hot and cold the year before. So he got hot at the right time, so people had a lot more respect for him. But if that's who you're going to get out of Phil Maton, the good thing is you can use him just as an insurance policy and an innings eater because you have so many other good arms in your bullpen.
And I think that's what he is. Like that's if he was your setup guy, that hurts.
Or even if he was your sixth or seventh inning
which
guy.
Which he was 2 years ago.
Yeah, you would have concern.
Yeah, the bullpen is like, it's gotten way better, which I think you can thank James Click for a little bit.
I don't disagree with that.
For building up that bullpen. 713-780-ESPN, 3667. Can we end the Jake Meyers experiment, please? He's going to get a shot.
It's if he's healthy, you might see a different Jake Meyers.
1509 Yuli. People criticize me for saying that Yuli was bad last year. If Yuli was good last year, like if I'm wrong, because a lot of people think I'm wrong by saying Yuli Gurriel was bad at baseball last year, which, I mean, look at the numbers. I'm not wrong. But if I was wrong, and people that are professionals at evaluating talent, people that are professionals of trying to, I don't know, be a GM and keep their job by putting together the best product on the field, why isn't Yuli Gurriel signed to a Major League Baseball team?
There's too many. Right, because you know what? Yuli is what Maton was 2 years ago. He was a guy that was awful in the regular season or not great, but stepped up in the playoffs and then caught the apple of everybody's eye going into the offseason, the guy you had to have back. And also, because unlike Maton, he has a legacy built during the golden era of Astros baseball that people don't want to forget. And the only way that you cannot forget him in some people's minds is to keep him around when he's past his prime. You're right. There's enough teams that have seen enough of Yuli Gurriel that says, look, that age is a factor. And he's not going to become a spring chicken overnight, no matter if he stops drinking beer and eating pizza and does whatever else he's going to do. And there's too many concerns to reap the possible benefits. That's why Yuli is not going to be on this team, and that's not why they haven't signed him, nor has anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, like, who's better, Trey Mancini or Yuli Gurriel?
I mean, Yuli in the playoffs.
Yeah, and Trey Mancini.
Trey Mancini in the regular season.
And Trey Mancini's on a team.
Yeah, Mancini's on a team.
He hit under 200 as an Astro.
Bad team.
Yeah, probably.
I got the over on the Cubs. I got the over on the Cubs today. I think they're going to win more games than
what was the over-under number set at?
I think it was 77.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I think it was 77. And they had so much.
They had a lot of money to spend too, but they did kind of shrewdly add a lot of players.
Now, a lot of them didn't have great seasons last year, like Mancini, like Bellinger. They added Dansby at shortstop. I'm probably missing a couple of names too.
Tyon.
Yeah, to be, I wouldn't say anchor that staff, but to pitch for them. They're better than they were a year ago.
Yep. For sure they are.
And with Yuli, it's not even just like 30 GMs passed on him. Three here passed on him. James Click didn't extend him at any point during the season. Interim general manager Jeff Bagwell, Bill Ferkus, Jim Crane didn't do anything with him.
Reggie,
no disrespect.
Don't disrespect Mr. October Candy Bar.
Or Enos Cabell.
Yeah, there's so many names to remember during that time. And then Dana Brown's not bringing him in either. Like, he's done.
Brown's flat out said there's not a bat for him, too. Like, Brown's been pretty adamant that Yuli's not a fit currently.
He's not a fit.
Yeah, he's really not.
Hot take that I hope I'm wrong on. I just really believe that there's going to be that Montero is going to, I don't want to say suck, but he's going to have a huge fall off.
Oh, I think it's going to look like a Jim Crane bad deal.
I know that there's going to be more eyes than normal because they overpaid him. But just watching his stuff on a nightly basis, I just feel like he's got the smallest margin of like what could go wrong.
I like his stuff, but he does nibble.
Yeah, and the fact nibble. That when his secondary pitches are off, they're off. I worry about that. I know he's got a plus-plus fastball, but that one scares me. I hope I'm wrong.
He's been pretty bad.
I'm really worried
about
him this year.
I understand where you are coming from, and I get it, because I also had those same concerns a year ago, but he's a rare reliever that has like a four pitch mix, and there's not many relievers that are like that. I don't think he's going to live up to like the value of his contract, but it didn't cost the Astros ramifications of doing anything else. I don't think he'll be as good as he was last year. I think last year is going to be a career year for Rafael Montero, but I don't think he's going to fall off the map. I don't think he's going to turn into Kent Giles.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you one of the blessings that you have, again, like we were talking about with Maton, is the fact that with a guy like Stanek that could be put so many different places, if a guy like Montero has a little bit of a falling off, you've got a guy like Stanek that you could, versatility-wise, put where you need him to be.
I'm curious how they handled the pecking order with Stanek and Abreu. Valentine's Day traditions. Anything good? Doing anything tonight?
No, when you get married and have kids and you got a wife working, doing the 6 o'clock news tonight too, it changes things a little bit.
Prime time.
Yeah, she's been doing she's got to do the 5 and 6 tonight as well, so that changes things for us a little bit.
Yeah.
The main thing is making sure the girls are happy. They had a big day with Valentine's Day parties and dresses and candy and all that, so that's the main focus.
My wife texted me 20 minutes ago and canceled on me. She canceled our date. Canceled our date 20 minutes ago. So I see what you're saying about the whole marriage thing.
It's got to be the ankle.
Marriage and kids. Yeah, I put a pee bag on my ankle yesterday and she got mad at me. She said it was not sanitary.
Frozen peas in a plastic bag?
That's what I did.
Yeah, you're fine.
She said it was not sanitary.
The peas are inside the bag.
She said, we're not eating that. I'm throwing it away.
You got to be kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Welcome to my world.
All right. Does it for us. Thanks to Joe George for doing all the hard work. He's Blank on Brandon. And we'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.